The time has come to get in shape, to get healthy. It's time to get fit for life. It's time for your ambassadors of fitness, Robert Superman Blunt and Rochelle Blunt, to discuss health and fitness issues like hypertension and other preventative diseases. Also to establish healthy lifestyles for the entire family, as well as nutritional programs. There'll be special guests and different exercises to improve your life. The next hour will be very informative. Your calls are welcomed at 320-1340. Now, here are your ambassadors of fitness, Robert Superman Blunt and Rochelle Blunt.
Good morning, good morning. Good morning, good morning. Robert Superman Blunt, where John Sherman is starting me off this morning totally different.
You don't even have to show up, you know? I mean, really, even when he shows up, he's not here.
Hey, John, I'm looking over here studying and got my head down. You queuing me up. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing good.
Great, great. Rochelle, how are you?
I'm good.
My beautiful wife,
yes,
Rochelle.
Yes, I'm blessed. You're, really blessed.
Yes, we are. Yes. It's good to look in your eyes this morning.
Mm-hmm. Now, good morning.
Yeah, I got a different tune for John over there, though. I'm going to tell you that later on. But hey, good morning, Robert Superman Blunt, my beautiful wife Rochelle, along with my man John Sherman. I call them the Two Live Crew. You know, we're here every Saturday morning talking fitness talk. You know, now fitness, Rochelle, John, we're talking about a gamut of things and a gamut of areas in our life that we need to be healthy.
Right.
You know, we're talking about healthy bodies. We talk about healthy spirits. We're talking about healthy souls.
Right.
You know, we're talking about healthy marriages, mm-hmm, and things of that nature. Healthy, strong, well-rounded children. Mm-hmm. So this show is a gamut of just social living and to live life abundantly. Mm-hmm. Not broken down, tired, separated, lonely, but to live life. Jesus said he came to give us life and so that we can live it more abundantly.
That's right.
So that's what this show is all about, teaching people how to live an abundant lifestyle, mm-hmm, and to live it healthy.
Right.
You know, quality of life is what it's all about. Martin Luther King made this statement. I'm paraphrasing it. He says that it's not about the longevity, but more so the quality of life.
Right.
You know, people want to live long, but they're living long and unhappy.
Right.
They're living long and the quality of life, mm-hmm, is not good.
Mm-hmm.
They're living long and lonely.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we're talking about. If we're going to live long, we want a quality of life.
Right.
I want to be here with you for a long time.
Good.
Happy and fulfilled, you know, not
right,
miserable.
Right.
And just saying I'm living, existing. So today, you know, we spoke, we did a great segment on when we're talking about marriage,
mm-hmm,
on our last segment.
Right.
You know, and all of this is going to be podcast. And when we get this set up on our website, we're gonna tune all of our listeners in, where if you miss a good segment, we're going to be going back. You can go to the website and you can just listen to all of these podcasts that we're going to be doing. And if you don't get it, just call John Sherman, because we put that on John.
John has it.
I send it to your guy, and it's your guy's responsibility.
Hey, John, don't put that on you, right? But, you know, John works along with us so well in that area. So we will have all of these segments on podcasts, and you'll be able to go to the website. Be Fit for Life, the letter B in boy, fitforlife.org, and you'll get an opportunity to hear
right,
a lot of these segments that you're missing. You know, today, John, Rochelle, what we thought was dear to our heart is we want to talk about the five love languages.
That's right.
Five love languages. And a lot of people listen and say, now, what in the world is that? Or, I've heard this before. What we learned prior to getting married, you know, Rochelle and I both had already been married before and, you know, wound up in a divorce. So this time when we met each other, God put us together. What we decided was we're not about to undertake this journey of marriage together under the same pretense that we already knew what to do.
Right.
I'm
apparently, we didn't know since we failed at our first one.
Thank you. And what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, in marriages, close to 50% of first marriages in this country ends in divorce.
Right.
Now, I was definitely in that percentage. You know, presently 50% of first marriages in this country end in divorce. 60% of second marriages and 75% of third marriages end up the same way.
Right.
So you get married. The first marriage we fight harder for.
Mm-hmm.
We fight for that first marriage. We want to hold on to it dearly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want a divorce.
Right.
There's just something there we don't want to give up. But there comes a point in that first marriage where we just raise our hands up and say, listen, this is not going to work because we don't have answers to it. And what I found out was just because I didn't have an answer to what was going on in my first marriage, somebody did. Someone else had the answer.
Right.
I had too much pride to go and get it.
And get help. And see, that's the problem. I'm wondering if that percentage is so high is because maybe they didn't have the tools or they didn't seek out to find the tools to keep their marriage healthy.
I would say both. I would say both. Obviously, we don't have the tools. You know, a lot of times, you know, you and I do a lot of spiritual marriage counseling. And a lot of times when people come to us, most times, it's starting to change a little bit, but most time the wife is having to drag the husband in for counseling.
Right.
Well, because men are what God gave us is natural leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like traveling.
Mm-hmm.
The wife is, you need to get asked for some direction.
Right, instead of going
you
in circles.
You need to stop and ask for, I don't need that. Are we going to figure it out?
Why don't
we just pull over, ask for some directions, get clarity, and get to where we're going quicker? But men have an issue with that.
Mm-hmm.
But that particular gift of leadership, if we're not careful, it can lead to deathship of your marriage.
Exactly.
See, and you made a good point. Won't come. And we don't have the answer.
Right.
We don't have the answer. And
you have to stop thinking that it's just going to work by itself. It doesn't work by itself. Nothing works by itself. Most things that work have a manual or instructions to follow. So you have to know what to do to keep your marriage alive. You just can't just, you know, be in a marriage and think, oh, everything's going to be wonderful. It don't work that way.
You know, Rochelle, that's a very good point. That when the marriage is broken, we don't want to go and get a manual. Nor do we want to call in a technician to help us fix it.
But if your car is broke,
I'm running to the mechanic. There's a leak in the kitchen. I'm calling the plumber. The roof is leaking. I call the carpenter, the roofer. That's the same thing with marriage. When we reach troubles in our marriage, you have to say, you know something? This is something I can't fix on my own.
Right.
But I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. What I need to find out is, okay, how can we fix this
right.
and make it anew? Now, let me give these percentages again. 40%, 50% of first marriages in this country end in divorce. 60% of second marriages and 75% of third marriages. I asked our pastor, Pastor Sam Carr, over at Word of Life, one day we was working together and I asked him, I said, Pastor, what is it about once you get past the first divorce, everything, you know, then it's a second, it's a third. And he said, Brother Blunt, he said, the more you do anything, the easier it becomes.
Right.
I don't care what it is.
Mm-hmm.
We have to learn the first time how to divorce a person.
Mm-hmm.
So we fight to hold that marriage before we dare step into this uncharted territory of marrying and divorcing.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to go there. So we fight to hold on to it. But when you finally go over into that area and you go through your first divorce and you learn all the legalities to it and the roadway out of it and how to rebuild your life, then when you get married a second time, I know my way out of here.
Right.
I'm not about to sit in here this long. So it becomes easier, easier each time.
Right. And I think that they don't get the tools that they need to help their marriage. You know what I'm saying? Or they don't value each other or their marriage.
Well, the first time, they blame the other person. It wasn't my fault. The second time, it's probably not my fault. Then by the third time, they're saying, no, none of these guys were any good anyway. I think that it's just... they're not learning.
Right.
They're not learning.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
They never do any soul searching and go, okay, let's see. It didn't work the first time. That could have been either me or her. The second time, you know, I might have to start thinking it might have something to do with me. And by the third time, you're going, it's my problem. You know?
But now, I like that. But oddly enough, I really believe, John, only a few people come to that conclusion.
That's right. They don't do the soul searching. They don't. Go,
I believe that's
true.
They
still think I was fine in this marriage. It was all everybody else's fault, and you still hold on to that.
That's true.
Right.
And what you have to look at is you are the only constant in each one of those marriages.
Right.
You're the only constant. If you wind up with 3-4 different women in marriages, mm-hmm. or if you're a woman and you're on your 3rd, 4th marriage, somewhere in here, you have to do some soul searching.
You have to look at yourself and
you
wonder why.
You have to.
Yeah.
Number one, am I choosing these people mm-hmm. or God choosing them for me?
That's good.
You see it?
Mm-hmm.
Is God, am I choosing my mate or is God choosing them for me?
Right.
If I'm choosing my mates, this is why I'm in so much mess, because I don't really know what's best for me.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I think I like, but I have not found out yet what I truly need.
Exactly.
That's important. I remember thinking about what I liked in a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go to looking funny. As soon as I said that, John, she started looking funny.
I could just imagine. Oh, Jesus.
John, so I'm not going to touch that either.
You're not getting that.
I always thought what I liked or what I needed or what I liked.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly and truly, John, Rochelle, I never knew what I truly needed in a wife. I knew what I liked in a woman
mm-hmm.
or what I thought I liked. But what it was, what I liked really, Rochelle, was only physical.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand the spiritual component of what I needed. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about this basic, and then we're going to move into what we call the 5 love languages, how to save your marriage by talking each other love language. Superman Blunt, the 2 Live Crew, Fitness Talk. We'll be right back. And we're back to Fitness Talk. Robert Superman Blunt, my 2 Live Crew, my beautiful wife, Rochelle, my main man, John Sherman. This morning, we're talking about the 5 love languages, Rochelle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we're going to be talking this morning about speaking each other's love language in the order of marriage or being able to build a strong, strong marriage. We're talking out of the book, The 5 Love Languages.
Right.
Written by Mr. Gary Chapman. And this book is absolutely amazing. It's the 5 love languages, and the author is Gary Chapman. And this is what we're teaching from this morning.
Right.
Listen to what he says here. Unfortunately, the eternality of the in-loving experience is fiction, not fact.
Mm-hmm.
A Dr. Dorothy Tenoff, a psychologist, has done long-range studies on the in-love phenomenon. After studying scores of couples, she concluded that the average lifespan of a romantic obsession is 2 years. If it's a secretive love affair, it may last a little longer. I don't know what that is about people in secret love affairs, the danger of it, the feeling. It's all about that emotional high.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, however, we all descend from the clouds and plant our feet on earth again. Our eyes are open, and we see the warts of the other person. We recognize that some of his or her personality traits are actually irritating.
Right.
Her behavior patterns are annoying.
Mm-hmm.
He has the capacity for hurt and anger,
mm-hmm.
perhaps even harsh words and critical judgments. Those little traits that we overlooked when we were in love now become huge mountains.
Mm-hmm.
We remember mother's words and ask ourselves, how could I have been so foolish? Welcome to the real world of marriage, where hairs are always on the sink and little white spots cover the mirror, where arguments center on which way the toilet paper comes off and whether the lid should be up or down. It's a world where shoes do not walk to the closet and drawers do not close themselves, where coats do not like hangers and socks go AWOL doing laundry. In this world, a look can hurt and a word can crush. Intimate lovers can become enemies and marriage a battlefield.
Wow. That's true.
Now, that is absolutely strong, isn't it?
It is.
You know, and the question comes, what happened to the love, the in-love experience? It was but an illusion by which we were tricked into signing our names on the dotted line for better or worse.
Right.
You know, what he's saying is our emotions override our logic all the time. Mm-hmm. Because when you find yourself falling in love with a person and, you know, we are so emotionally encompassed.
Right.
I mean, those pretty slanted eyes.
Yeah, when everything's going good and great, it's fine.
Or just, it's not, it don't matter.
Right.
How it's going, it don't matter. You step on my toes. Now, it's, oh, don't worry about it, baby. I understand. You know, you give me that little frown. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then the author here is saying after a year or two, then reality begins to set in.
Exactly.
You know, and I think, as a matter of fact, I don't think, see, in my first marriage, when I got beyond the courting stage or this, Romeo-Juliet stage of the marriage, then comes the reality of
the fairy tale.
The fairy tale ends.
Right.
And I think what it is, a lot of people like falling in love and getting married only to enjoy the experience of the beginning and the fairy tale.
Right.
Once that ends, they become bored and they have no drive in them, John, to say, all right, this is the next phase that we have to learn to get through. You know, off the air, we were talking, John, and I hope you don't mind about us bringing this up, because I like, you know, I like involving people who has experience. You know, we were just talking. John has been married one woman 36 years.
It's a blessing.
Now, and John, as we listen to these things.
I got married when I was three, by the way.
Hey, listen. All right. So you was one of those jokers who got coaxed to go. You got coaxed to sign on the dotted line.
I don't know. You know, we've had, you know, our ups and downs have never been drastic ups and downs. You know what I'm saying? The bad times have never been bad times. You know, it's always just, I don't know, we plod along and just everything is, it's always been good. You know, I can't complain. I can't say, well, things got better. Finally, they got better. Or were they really bad now? I've never been able to say that. I've never wanted to say that. And I've never said that to anybody like, yeah, my marriage is going down. It's not. Because it's been good.
That's a blessing.
Isn't that a blessing? Mm-hmm. And it's good to hear that. And, you know, it says a lot. It says a lot about you and your wife, about how they perceive life.
Right.
How they perceived each other.
Mm-hmm. And the commitment.
And
yeah.
The commitment
right.
that they made to one another.
Just because her standards are not very high.
You know? You know, that's a very good point. A lot of times we go into marriages and our mistake are we set standards so high.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to realize this. I don't expect my wife to do basically anything. I look forward to everything she does. And now that's a mindset. When you have an expectation of people doing certain things and being a certain way, a person can always, always not meet your expectations.
Exactly.
And if your expectations of a person and that bar has been set so high, you yourself have set your marriage for failure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do I mean is I'm not saying that we are to sit back and not have a desire and a commitment to each other to grow together. I'm saying we have to be very, very careful about setting this huge bar of expectations. I expect Rochelle to do this way because this is the way I expect it to get done.
You can't use that. You can't do that. You can't do that at all.
No.
You have to expect yourself to do the things the right way so she will understand. And she'll turn around and she'll be exactly the way you want her to be if you know what you want, but not forcing it on her.
I totally agree with that. And that's good. And what's strong about what John just said, I was talking to a client in my studio the other day. You know, people who listen to our show, you have to understand, Fit for Life is not just about working people out physically. What we do at our studio is three-dimensional. We work on healthy souls, mind, and spirits. We're working on that body, mind, soul. You know, so sometimes people come into the gym, John, and we've got their workouts planned. It's time for them to come in. This is their hour to work out. And as soon as they walk into the gym, the whole atmosphere of the facility changes. From the seat that I'm sitting in, I see God change the whole atmosphere of that gym into not training, but counseling. That client was not sent in here this morning for exercise of the physical body. They need their soul to be strengthened this morning. We don't train. They sit on a bench, and all we do is communicate their hurts, their pains, their struggles, what's going on. That's what I love about what God is doing with us with Fit for Life. It's helping people in all areas of their life. John made a very good point. I was talking to this young man just the other day about him and his marriage. And what I shared with him, you know, men, and I'm talking about all of us, we have this issue about taking full responsibility of everything that's put under us. I don't care what the world says about men and women are equal. Listen, this is not a chauvinistic standard I'm saying here. If you're living your life based on biblical standards, you're going to be fine. Marriage was not created by man, nor the world. You cannot let man create the rules and standards of marriage. It's automatic failure. Man has never been smart enough to create life. I was talking to a guy talking about science and this and that, and I asked him a question. If we're talking evolution and we're talking science and doctors, no man has been able to reproduce a male sperm.
Right.
They can't reproduce my sperm.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not as smart as we think we are. And I'm trying to bring people back. You've got to get the devil out of society and out of our minds and out of our marriage.
Right.
See, when two people say that I am equally important and doing the exact same thing, you got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a president and a vice president.
Right.
Not two presidents.
Right.
When you go to school, you've got a principal mm-hmm. and you've got a vice principal.
Right.
I don't care where you go. There's nothing with two heads to it unless it's a freak.
Exactly.
You can't have two heads. At Cumulus Broadcasting, there is one general manager and somebody under him.
That does the work.
That does the work.
Exactly.
You don't have two heads.
Exactly. It's not going to work if you think you have that.
It doesn't.
Right.
And see, and the world is trying to tell marriages that a husband and wife are equal in the same areas of the marriage. And that's not true. I say that because I cannot wear Rochelle's slipper and being a wife.
Right.
When it comes to being a wife, a mother, I cannot wear my wife's slipper. I don't have a clue what it takes to be a wife. So how am I going to be equal to Rochelle in that? I can't be. I allow Rochelle to be a 100% woman, a 100% wife, a 100% mother, and I respect her for those roles. She respects me for being a 100% husband, a 100% father, a 100% leader and provider. That's what makes these marriages work. When we set in our roles, when your roles intertwine, that's when we have problems. Robert Superman Blunt, my beautiful wife Rochelle, my main man John Sherman, talking about the five love languages of marriages. We'll be right back. Are you tired? And we're back. Robert Superman Blunt, my two live crew, my beautiful wife Rochelle, my main man John Sherman. This morning we're talking about the five love languages. Mm-hmm. And before we actually get to that five, what we're doing is actually laying this foundation as to why these five love languages are so important. You know, John, I found out years ago that I did not understand what a love language was. Mm-hmm. My concept of marriage was, this is the way I see it. This is what I think ought to make you happy. As a man, if me doing this for you, you ought to be happy.
Right.
I come home in the evening and I go and feed my dogs and I don't bother you. I don't cheat on you. I pay the bills.
In other words, you're expecting her to say thank you.
There you go. You ought to be the happiest person in the world. Come to find out all those things that I'm doing, I think I'm doing them because they pleases me as a man to do them with an expectation that she ought to be so appreciative of it. That doesn't mean that she's not appreciative of it, but let's say that's not her love language.
Right.
You know, I'm looking for words of affirmation and she might be looking for acts of service. So we're going to get into this because when you're thinking one thing, and your wife or your husband is expecting or looking toward another, that's where we miss that mark.
Right.
Matter of fact, we were in a counseling session once, and we had this young man talking to the group. Then we had about 5-6 couples, and he was really in tears. His wife wanted a divorce, and he sat there and he said, "I have done everything that I could." He said, "I work hard. I give her money. I buy diamond rings. I even built a home for her. I built a brand new home for her by my own hand. I wanted her to be happy. I want to be a good provider. I want to be a good dad." And seemed like regardless to what I did, she was never happy.
He didn't get it.
He didn't
he
get
never,
it.
He never asked her what made her happy.
Bingo. That's
bingo.
It.
And yeah. You know what she told him? She said, "I appreciated all that, but all I wanted was when you'd come home in the evening is sit down, turn the TV off, and spend some time with me, and you never did." Her love language was not building houses and receiving gifts. She needed quality time.
Right.
And if we don't understand that, that's the area that we miss when we say, regardless to what I do for you, I'm not making you happy. That's because you're not speaking the love language. Mm-hmm. And we have to find out now, as we get into this series of teaching, you're going to find out that those love languages change.
They do. As you grow. They really do.
As he and she grows, it changes.
Right.
His might be our affirmation now. But then later, he likes to get the
physical touch.
Yeah. You know.
I think that's always for men, number one primary language. And then after that, they pick something else.
Well,
am I right?
Well, you can believe that physical touch.
Okay. Right.
That's going to always be somewhere in that high.
Let's just move on.
Yeah. Right. That's going to be in the high two. That's going to be in the high twos anyway. But, you know, this is interesting. What I'm reading here about, listen to what the author says here. He says, once the experience of falling in love has run its natural course, remember, the average in-love experience lasts 2 years. We'll return to the world of reality and begin to assert ourselves. He'll express his desires, but his desires will be different from hers. Now, this is after the 2-year experience, love experience.
Right.
He desires sex, but she's too tired. He wants to buy a new car, but she says that's absurd. She wants to visit her parents, but he says, I don't like spending so much time with your family. He wants to play in the softball tournament, and she says, you love softball more than you love me. Little by little, the illusion of intimacy evaporates, and the individual desires, emotions, thoughts, and behavior patterns exert themselves. They are two individuals. Their minds have not melded together, and their emotions mingled only briefly in the ocean of love. Now the waves of reality begin to separate them. They fall out of love, and at that point, either they withdraw, separate, divorce, and set off in search of a new in-love experience, or they begin the hard work of learning to love each other without the euphoria of the in-love experience or right. obsession.
Right. You know, and since most couples don't get that counseling that they need, it winds up in divorce. If you don't have these tools, then what do you do? You work out of what do you have. And if you don't know anything, then it's not going to work.
It's the emotions that we have to understand that eventually these euphoric emotions of marriage dissipates.
Mm-hmm.
And once we realize that falling in love has nothing to do with your feelings. Nothing. Feelings are like a leaf in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
They float back and forward.
Right.
Today I feel great. Tomorrow I feel miserable. Today I feel up here. Tomorrow I might be in a depressive state. You cannot build your marriage, John, on how you feel.
Right.
You can't do it. So what the author's trying to show us here, you're going to have to realize that marriage is so much stronger
mm-hmm.
and greater than your emotions.
That's good.
You see it?
Mm-hmm.
It's an absolute great thing. Now, let's get into the actual love language.
Mm.
The first actual love language is words of affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
John spoke that earlier. Now, you'll find this usually with men.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, your husband must receive words of affirmation.
Right.
Because if he's walking in his calling,
mm-hmm.
see, this is where I talked earlier about role mixing.
Mm-hmm.
Once you begin to mix each other's roles, where normally I'm supposed to do this and supposed to do that, it's like it's a team. Whenever you look at a football team, there's only one quarterback. His job is to take the snap and run the play that the coach is sent in.
Mm-hmm.
The center's job is not to try to throw a football. His job is to snap it to the quarterback.
Right.
That's his job.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive lineman's job are to block a certain way so that the quarterback, the running back, and receivers can do their job.
Mm-hmm.
Once you begin to mix those roles, the team element breaks down.
Right.
The team element breaks down because we're mixing roles.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've got a 320-pound lineman running out to catch a pass when he don't catch balls. My wife, John, in our marriage, the way God has orchestrated our marriage, I am the leader, the head, the provider of our family. It's the way God put it. So it's no need of me looking at Rochelle to be the money maker. That's not on her. He put that on me. That's the way it is. Some marriages, both parents, both spouses work together, whatever. My point is roles.
Right.
What are your roles?
Mm-hmm.
Even though we both work together as providers, once that leaves, I'm still a husband and she's still a wife. What are our roles?
Right.
As a wife, what are your roles as a wife?
Mm-hmm.
You have a husband and children.
Right.
As a wife.
To help, to adapt, to.
What are your roles?
Right. to help
as
you.
A husband, yeah, I work, but my wife works too. Mm-hmm. So now still, after we finish with the daily job, we're no longer employees or employers. Mm-hmm. Now the hat of husband, father comes on. What are my roles?
Right.
If we are role mixing, if I expect Rochelle to do what I normally or should do, then Rochelle is looking for affirmation that, Rochelle, thank you, baby, for taking out the garbage. Thank you for mowing the lawn. Rochelle, thank you for going out there and changing the oil. Rochelle, thank you for getting out there and paint the house, baby. Thank you for when the burglar broke in last night. I took the baby and ran to the closet, and you went and met him. Thank you for protecting us, Rochelle.
Right.
That's role mixing. See, that's role mixing. So now Rochelle is looking for me to say, baby, thank you for protecting me from the burglar last night. But somewhere in here, Rochelle is going to begin to resent me for not being the leader, the protector of this family, because I am out of my role element. Robert Superman Blunt, my beautiful wife, Rochelle, and John Sherman, talking the five love language. We'll be right back. And we're back, Robert Superman Blunt, my two live crew, talking fitness talk this morning. We're here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. talking fitness talk right here at Super Talk 1340 and 100.7 FM. Next week, we're going to open the lines up.
Okay.
Because I think we've got some antsy people on the other line here just jumping.
Want to know.
Just jumping about this. You know, the first love language is words of affirmation. And I'm going to read a little bit from this book about this author. And he's going to give us some examples. And I want the listeners to really listen to this. I'm coming out of the book, The Five Love Languages. The words of affirmation. He says, first love language. Mark Twain once said, I can live for 2 months on a good compliment. If we take Twain literally, 6 compliments a year would have kept his emotional love tank at the operational level. Your spouse would probably need more. One way to express love emotionally is to use words that build up.
Right.
Solomon, author of the ancient Hebrew wisdom, literally wrote, the tongue has the power of life and death. Many couples have never learned the tremendous power of verbally affirming each other. Solomon further noted, an anxious heart weighs a man down, but a kind word cheers him up. Verbal compliments or words of appreciation are powerful communicators of love. They are best expressed in simple, straightforward statements of affirmation, such as, you look great in that suit. Hmm. Do you ever look nice in that dress? Woo, girl, you look good. You must be the best potato cookie in the world. Girl, I love the way you cook these potatoes. I really appreciate you washing the dishes tonight. Thanks for getting the babysitter lined up tonight. I want you to know I don't take that for granted. Now, these are just words of right. affirmation. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate your taking the garbage out, baby. What would happen to the emotional climate of a marriage if the husband and wife heard such words of affirmation regularly? Several years ago, the author of the book here, he's talking. He said he was sitting in his office with his doors open, and a lady walking down the hall stopped him and said, have you got a minute? He said, sure, come in. She sat down and said, Doc, I've got a problem. I cannot get my husband to paint our bedroom. Mm. I've been after him for 9 months. I've tried everything I know, and I can't get him to paint. My first thought was, lady, you at the wrong place. I ain't no paint contractor. But he said, well, tell me about it. He wanted to listen to it. She said, well, last Saturday was a good example. You remember how pretty it was. Do you know what my husband did all day long? Instead of painting the house, he washed and waxed that car. So he said, what did you do? I went out there and said, I don't understand you. Today would have been a perfect day to paint the bedroom, and here you are washing and waxing the car. So, did he paint the bedroom? The doc inquired. No, it's still not painted. I don't know what to do. Then the doc said, let me ask you a question. Are you opposed to clean wax cars? No, but I want the bedroom painted. Are you certain that your husband knows that you want the bedroom painted? I know he does, she said. I've been after him for 9 months. Let me ask you one more question, doc says. Does your husband ever do anything good? Like what? Said, oh, like taking the garbage out or getting bugs off the windshield of the car you drive or putting gas in your car or paying the electric bill or hanging up his coat. Yeah, she said, he does some of those things. Then I have two suggestions. One, don't ever mention painting the bedroom again. I repeat it. Don't ever mention it again. I don't see how that's going to help, she said. Listen to this quote. The object of love is not getting someone you want, but doing something for the well-being of the one you love. It is a fact, however, that when we receive affirming words, we are far more likely to be motivated to reciprocate. Look, you just told me that he knows that you want the bedroom painted. You don't have to tell him anymore. He already knows. The second suggestion I have is that the next time your husband does anything good, give him verbal compliment. If he takes the garbage out, say, Bob, I want you to know, I really appreciate your taking the garbage out. Don't say, about time you took that garbage out. The flies were going to carry it out for you. If you see him paying the electric bill, put your hand on his shoulder and say, Bob, I really appreciate you paying the electric bill, sweetheart. I hear there are husbands who don't do that, and I want you to know how much I appreciate it. Every time he does anything good, give him a verbal compliment. I don't see how that's going to get the bedroom painted. I said, you asked for my advice, the doc said. You have it. It's free. She wasn't very happy with what the doctor told her when she left. 3 weeks later, however, she came back to the doctor's office and said, it worked. She had learned that verbal compliments are far greater motivators than nagging words.
Mm, so good. So good.
Listen, it is a fact, however, that when we receive affirming words, we are far more likely to be motivated to reciprocate and do something our spouse desires. This is what the doc is trying to say. Stop nagging.
Right.
Stop nagging your spouse about things that you want done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I say this especially when you're talking to your husband.
Mm-hmm.
See, because we don't need to be nagged.
Mm-hmm.
All you need to do is drop a seed.
Right.
Baby, you know, I really would like this room painted. Will you do that for me? Yeah, I'm going to get to it. And then daily, just affirm good things to him.
Mm-hmm.
Affirm good things to him. See, the way we are, you've already told us what you want done.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't gotten it done. But every day, you're constantly affirming him. And every day you walk in that room not painted, something begins to eat at a man.
Mm-hmm.
You're not nagging him about it. You're not complaining about it. But he knows I am not fulfilling my promise as being a provider and a leader.
Right.
Because my wife asked me to do this. She really wanted it done. And I'm not getting it done. You know, giving verbal compliments is only one way to express words of affirmation to your spouse. Another dialect is encouraging words. The word encourage means to inspire courage,
mm-hmm.
you know, and these words of affirmation will change your course in your relationship. You have got to build each other up. The Bible says that sweet words are like a honeycomb.
Mm-hmm.
If you eat this, that, you know, that's sweet and pleasing and affirming, Rochelle.
Exactly. Compliments are great. And if they're going to build your marriage and make it healthier, why not do it?
Constantly. Okay, these are the things that are so important. Using words of affirmation, you know, and I just want to continue in this area of words of encouragement, because, you know, next week we're going to finish up on words of affirmation. Mm-hmm. You know, this is so important.
Right.
Again, if you're constantly nagging your spouse about something, mm-hmm. you want done. Those words are not encouraging. Nagging words are off negative emotion.
Mm-hmm. And then I think he just turns off to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Am I right?
You just shut it off. Mm-hmm. You don't hear it the next time. You're going, okay, I've heard it once. I already know it. And I'm not going to listen to it the next time.
And nagging words bring about a level of negative response. Because nagging words are usually negative. And you can't speak negative words into a person's life and look for a positive response. You must speak positively in someone's life if you want a positive response, Rochelle. And you know, and I see it all the time. Two spouses are speaking so negative toward one another, and they get angry because they don't get a positive response.
Right.
Now, if you are the person who understands that, if your wife speaks some negatively or your husband speaks something negatively and you return with something positively, that person eventually has to look in the mirror or look at themselves as though something is wrong. And it's not with my spouse, it's with me. Because I'm speaking negative and my wife, Rochelle, is always saying, you know, I love you. And regardless to how you feel, I love you. And I love all the great things that you do as a husband. And I'm sorry if I've hurt your feelings or I've let you down in this area, but I love you. See, somewhere in here, these nagging words are going to have to change the course. Because why am I nagging and beating up on a woman who loves me, understands me, stands for me, and puts up with me regardless to what my emotional state is? That brings me to a level of wanting to reciprocate with positive words, positive emotions. Okay, you know, we're going to be talking. You know, I don't know. It's not us, John. God takes it. And John said, listen, you might want to do a series on this. We're going to do a series on the five love languages.
Okay.
And we're going to podcast these also. So today we've started with
words
of affirmation. We're going to get into acts of service. We're going to get into
quality time,
receiving gifts.
And
physical touch. All of these are words of affirmation and some of the five love languages. And we're going to be teaching you to learn how to speak your spouse's love language and actually learning what that love language is. You know, so coming back next week, we're going to pick up again on words of affirmation. And I hope we're encouraging people in that area, Rochelle.
I hope so, too.
Okay. So remember, words of affirmation next week. John Sherman, my beautiful wife, Rochelle, Robert Superman Blunt. Listen, coming back next week. Words of affirmation. Let God speak to your heart. Stop nagging one another and begin to love each other more.
Give more compliments.
With words of affirmation. Robert Superman Blunt, the 2 Live Crew, talking fitness talk. See you next week. Bye-bye.